I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
1, 2, 3, 4!
Join us on this trip. No, more like journey. We're throwing out the script. We don't charge a penny. We can't call in. Top star, free bowling.
I love how you're like, we were burns as pee, and they're like, we're ready to clap. I feel like burning pee is a symptom of the clap. Welcome back, everybody.
You're going to leave the burning pee in thing, aren't you?
I have to. It's too good.
You goddamn son of a bitch.
It's too good. The setup is too good.
I just need to let everyone know, my pee is not burning. It was a joke. I successfully peed before we recorded. Recording is me needing to go for a shit, though. That seems to happen like every 30 minutes right now.
Well, you're in a cleanse.
I'm in a cleanse. My body's like, let's get all that bad shit out.
Yeah.
There's a lot of bad shit in me.
it's got to come out. It's got to come out somewhere. Better out than in, right?
In this point, as yes,
as Shrek would say.
You know they're making a new one of those motherfucking movies.
Yeah, they are.
I don't know if anyone's confirmed yet, but at this point, it's like trying to get the cast of Community back together for the movie.
Well, that isn't that like supposed to be in the works? Like every time
that's supposed to be happening. I follow the Community TikTok, and like they even posted an interview with Childish Gambino from like 2 weeks ago, and he says like, "Yo, we're supposed to start filming in a couple of weeks. Like everyone signed the contract. Everyone's on board." But no one has a script. Like he was saying, like he checked with Allison, he checked with Joel. No one's received anything. And apparently filming is supposed to start like late spring, early summer, and just nothing. Like no, according to Childish Gambino, in the actor's sense, they've seen no progression. So that sounds like a great start to the Community movie.
Well, I saw that interview, and he was talking about how, like, when they were shooting the show, there were a lot of times they wouldn't get the scripts till just before they were about to shoot.
Yeah.
So that's kind of what he's expecting. Like, we aren't seeing these fucking scripts until we're on set.
Yeah. I think if you look back at, like, the most successful Community episodes, they're the ones written and directed by Joe and Anthony Russo. Is it Anthony?
Yeah,
the
Russo brothers. Yeah,
the Russo brothers. You know, they went on to do a couple of successful movies. I don't know if you've heard, just some little Marvel movies, nothing major. they should come back. Honestly, they should come back. And if it is them directing it, then it makes sense to do the whole script stays confidential until filming, because that's what they that's what they did with the Avengers. I don't know if it was like if that was their style, but like it made sense for the MCU. I've just hit the shit out of my mic. It made sense for the MCU because, you know, you don't want script leaks.
Like, I don't know if you saw it, apparently we were talking about potentially joining the DCU under James Gunn.
Yes.
And they're like, they're totally open to it.
He was mentioning James. On Twitter that there's been talks already between a combo DC Marvel, which is huge because they're like some of the biggest like comic book events ever.
And I mean, it's not like it's happened. It happened in the comics a few times, and you know, a lot of those books are really good.
Mm-hmm.
But like, they were very clear. Like, if they do come on to do something DC, they don't want to do anything Batman related.
Okay, why not just make it an in DC's case? Why not just make it an Elseworld movie?
Well, I think they want to come in for like the main story.
Mm.
They just don't want to do Batman. Like, they feel like they're open to doing anyone else.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, why not get like a team?
I would get them for a Justice League movie, honestly.
Yeah, honestly.
I feel like they would do it that well. But I can understand why, from a directing standpoint, you wouldn't want to do a Batman movie just because of how many there've already been and the amount of comparisons you're going to get. And just like it's living up to this I mean, obviously they can live up to expectations because they've done it multiple times. But whether or not they want to, I feel like is the thing. Just so I would personally love to give me
a Marvel DC, like one Marvel character, one DC character, give me a movie.
Like what I would like to see them direct.
Yeah, like who would you see in a Marvel DC crossover? If you had to pick two characters to do a crossover, like two main characters. There'll be other characters, of course, but like who would be your two mains?
Spider-Man and Batman.
I think I'd have to go with Spider-Man. Deathstroke, Punisher.
That'd be dope.
Like, those guys would end up teaming up and just being like, both our universes suck. Let's just cleanse them.
Kill everyone. the reason I'm picking Spider-Man and Batman, there's a book. I have it, and I've read it many times, and it's just so fascinating because the whole thing stems from Carnage seeing essentially Joker has been lobotomized. And he's normal, and he's a member of society. It's like this new tech that's been implanted into his brain that makes him normal and essentially destroys, quote-unquote, the Joker.
Yeah.
Carnage sees this, doesn't like it. He's a massive Joker fan. He goes, he unlobotomizes the Joker, and they team up. And I'm like, that's a pairing that's terrifying. And so you get, you know, your Spider-Man and your Batman team up, and the kind of a lot of similarities between the two of them. They're both very smart. They both have tragic backstories. I feel like it's one of those things where it's like, as similar as they are, you see how witty and kind of lighthearted Spider-Man is in comparison to how dark and brooding Batman is.
Yeah.
I feel like they play off of each other really well.
You see, I've not gone off any comic book knowledge. So I guess, you know, 10 points to Sebastian. No, because that sounds awesome. My movie's just like,
right?
You know what? This is what I would like to see. Your legs, like, so let me take you back to like 2008 when I was like a 14-year-old little boy. Let me take you about the ins and outs of the comic. Here's Act One. Here's Act Two. Here's where you could lead into like a possible another movie. Like, what the fuck? Like, you didn't have to slap me around like that, bro. Like, I've got feelings
too. I'm just saying, it's good. No, it's good. I feel like that would be really good. But speaking of movies, we both have major updates for, you know, stuff we're working on.
Major updates. Like, usually you'd think...
Go ahead, bro.
Usually...
Lay it on me.
Usually...
Yours was more recent than mine.
Usually you would think, like, if there's major updates from us, there'd be, like, this whole hiatus. But we've managed to sort of keep this going. Which I'm proud of. You know, we need to find ways to do that. So my major update is my short film had a private screening in a cinema in Birmingham last night. So I don't know when this is going to release, so I really can't say last night. But recently, my movie had a screening in Birmingham. We invited like industry professionals, we invited some friends, cast, crew, all that good stuff. And honestly, it was awesome, man. It was the first movie I've screened outside of a festival, outside of education. So it was really, like, it was daunting a little bit. It was daunting. I was nervous. Mm-hmm. But, like those were suppressed by just the sheer excitement. Like, it could have been, like, five people in the audience, two of which would have been, my mum. The other two would have been some friends. But it wasn't. Like, we filled that screen. Like, I stood up front to do, like, the opening speech. And, like, I looked out yonder and I was like, yo, like, I know we didn't fill the entire screen, but we did fucking well. 2 weeks mm-hmm. this took. 2 weeks. I had a holiday as well in that time. Like, yeah. And the only thing I can do is sit here as happy as I am and be like, what could we have done had we given ourselves like another 2 weeks? We could have filled that whole fucking thing. Like, I was so proud of everyone involved. Everyone that came got, like, you know, I know they don't, not everyone that went to the screening listens to the podcast, but, like, thank you to everyone that went. It's so successful that I want to do another screening in London, but this time I want to start planning it now for a summer screening. I want the entire cast and crew, because unfortunately, like, two of the main cast members couldn't make it to the screening yesterday, which is pretty sucky because like, missed out on some good casting photos, and there was a lot of photo opportunities that we missed last night as well. Like, we woke up this morning, me and the team, like the boys that helped me make the movie, and we were like, didn't really get a lot of like postable photos. Like, we had to like sort of wrangle everyone that went. It's like, hey, I saw you taking photos, can I get those? Like, yeah. It was a bit of a goal-mouth scramble there. When there was this whole upstairs area that was like available to us in the lobby where we could have easily set something up, like with some lights. Like, we didn't get posters. Like, so, you know, there was things like that could easily be done for another screening, and this screening was so successful and so well received, and like, I'm so excited for where the movie can go from now. Like, with the festivals upcoming, that if we do get a little bit more traction with festivals, we get a little bit more interest from industry heads. Like, people have been contacting us saying, hey, heard the screening went well, I'm sorry I couldn't make it. I was like, yo, like, maybe we should do another one. Like, get the entire cast and crew. I'm talking black tie event this time, because it was a bit, like, it was smart casual. So, black tie event, like, suited and booted down in London. Let's do it, you know, let's do it big time. You know, and maybe this time, like, do, you know, it's a couple of quid for a ticket kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it was awesome, man. Like, I made so many contacts, I had so many conversations. And plus, there was a bar right next to the cinema where after we finished in the cinema, a few of us went to the bar, and there's, you know, drinks were flowing, there was conversations going, like, everyone was talking XYZ. Yeah, like, it's my job now to sort of, who do I remember speaking to? Who said they could, like, do shit for me? Like, fuck. So, like, I made sure to wake up this morning and, like, talk to the boys and just be like, yo, we need a breakdown. We need a breakdown. Who did we speak to? Who said they could do what? Who, like, who needs contacting immediately? Like, you know, but it's really exciting things. And the movie itself, man, like, I've done short movies before, and like, I've seen them on the big screen, I'm like, yo, like, the blacks look a little bit crushed, the colors don't blend very well, the sound isn't done very well. We did a proper digital cinema package for this cinema. There was no laptop, there was no USB. We're like, look, we're going to properly do this. We filmed this proper. We got proper sound done from a post-production sound company. Alex Gregson from 344, who did the opening music for this for us. He did the sound for Raven. Dude.
Yeah.
Dude. It was like, we came out of the screen and about 10 people came up to me. Like, a few people from the crew, some people not from the crew. They were like, like it ended and I was like, yo, do not end there. I need more. And I was like, yo, yeah. Things go the right way. Like I'm already writing the feature. I'm already writing the feature treatment for more. Like there's definitely more in my little noggin that I'm trying to like get onto the page in a coherent way. Right now, it's in a very incoherent way. but there, that's where all scripts start. Anyone who writes a script know yeah. that like it will start incoherent, and then it's your job to sort of, you know, maybe not that
yep.
I can combine this and that. And I was like, hang on, this is looking. Like, for, like, just base notes for a feature, I got 12 pages. And I was like, that's a good start. Like, that's just notes.
Yeah.
Like, when I expand on some of those notes, it'll become 14, 15 pages. I tell you what, that's a fucking feature treatment right there.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I've got things in bold, underlined. Like, so I'm going to start in appendices. I'm going full Tolkien mode on this, bro. Like, I'm writing down the lore, the history. It's like, where they are in this world. Needs like it has a history, so I'm like, yo, it's my job to fucking know that history now. Like, let me. It's pure yeah. creation, bro. Like, I absolutely like. I'm having so much fun. Like, the only thing holding me back is my imagination. Honestly, I just can't. I met with someone today, one of the actors who wants to help me develop the movie, and he was like, before you start like sort of going crazy with ideas, we got to know the rules. What are the boundaries? Set the boundaries. And then you can sort of, you can build from there. So that's where I am, man. And honestly, I can't wait to hear back from some of these festivals. We've not heard from any yet. But we should soon. And I'm...
Mm-hmm.
I'm so excited. I just can't fight it. You know.
I don't know the words after that. So we'll give it to you, Sebastian. What are you doing? Let me know.
So I just wrapped on the rough cut of this feature doc. And it's crazy, man. It's all I've been working on for like the last month or so.
Can we hit pause there since coming back from Boston? Because you just said feature doc like it was nothing and it needs a quick wah, 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 wah. That's big boy shit, bro. You're not messing around with 10-minute shorts, my G. You're messing around with the big boys.
Yeah, man. It so total time on the rough came out to an hour 40. And I just remember sitting there like as soon as I hit export, my body was just like, "Oh, fuck." Because it's crazy looking back at it now. It was literally this whole feature documentary is a 2-person team. It was me and Thea, the producer. I directed. I was the cinematographer, editor. Once I lock it down, I'm gonna do color. At some point, I will also do sound. No, I actually may not do sound, which I'm kind of very super thankful for, because. You know, I love the project, and I'm super passionate about it. And it's funny because like when I exported it and got it done and everything, I remember Theo was asking if I was nervous about screening it, because we're screening it. You know, I was screening it to Thea, I was screening it to Dana, the person who you know we made the doc about, and our composer and a friend of Dana's who was kind of there for emotional support for Dana. And at first, I was like, nah, I'm all good. I'm totally good. Like there was a confidence in me that was like, even if it's shit, it's a rough. It's something I can work off of. Right. Literally half hour before we start screening, my fucking blood's pumping. My adrenaline is going crazy. The nerves were like, you're not nervous. We're just going to go ahead and crank this to 11. And then we're just going to let you sit in it for a little while. We're just gonna let you sit in it for a little while. And I was like, fuck.
That happened to me. We were meant to leave my house at 6 to get to the location, to get to the cinema for 6:30. Doors open at 7. I wanted to be there to greet people as they came in. And my brother's like, yo, I'm passing through Solihull to get to the cinema. And he showed us a picture and was like, oh, it's 6:02. And I was like, yo, what?
The time has been in my head all day that nothing's happened is changing now.
Like, I went quiet, man. I wasn't even watching TikToks. I was just scrolling, like, nope.
Nah, dude, I was like, I couldn't feel my fingers for a little bit. Like, I was sweating. I could feel my heart racing. And then I sit down and I set up, because we did it over Zoom. It's a bi-coastal production. You know, me and Thea are on the West Coast. Mm-hmm. Dana and the composer are all on the East Coast. So I set it up. I hit play. And everyone turns off their cameras. Everyone turns off their mics. And I'm sitting there. I'm like, I'm going to make myself a drink. Everyone's watching it. I have seen everything to such a degree. Like, you know, you've edited your own stuff before. Like, you know, yeah. after a certain amount of time, you're just like, I love this, but if I look at it one more goddamn time,
I'm gonna hate it.
I'm gonna absolutely put my fist through this computer.
we were in post production. We had 3 days with 344 doing post sound, and honestly, we needed a week. But like, I know every single line from my fucking movie. When I watch it on my phone now, and it comes to the moment where Forgin, the dad, is like sort of deliberating one of the son's like ceremonial gifts, he just goes adequate, adequate, and it's become like,
spoiler alert,
it's become like an everyday thing for me now. Like when someone says something to me and I like it, I'm just like adequate, adequate. That's how many times I've heard that fucking line. And Alex was just there, like, hang on, there's something wrong with the backgrounds here. Like, you know, we didn't get a good enough boom or something. And I was like, I have to hear these two words one more goddamn time. I'm gonna kill someone.
So, you know, I needed a break. I knew everyone else was watching it. Everyone who needed to watch it was watching it. Nobody knew I wasn't.
You were watching the wrestling.
I
made myself,
I was playing wrestling, dude. I was on 2K23. I was sipping on a fucking, yes, on a White Russian, playing 2K23. And I had headphones on so I could hear the movie. So I knew, I was still kind of paying attention, but also not watching it. But like, and you know, everyone was done. I turned everything off, came back, hopped on with everyone. Everyone was really happy with it. So that was just like a wave. Like, that was, you know, I knew I was going to get the most notes from Thea, but also because she is the producer, so she's looking at it, mm-hmm, as a producer, mm-hmm, as opposed, mm-hmm, to everyone else. They're like, you know, this is just a movie. I'm watching a movie. I kind of like the movie. I don't like the movie. So I was expected. I think the biggest things are just like a couple of just structural things. Just, you know, things need to be moved around, kind of. It's essentially just finding the right places for these puzzle pieces.
Next week when we come on to do the podcast, like, we need to break down your process of like planning a feature, filming a feature, post-production for a feature. Like, anyone, like, most of our listeners have knowledge in shorts. Not everyone here has knowledge in features. People have been on features for a few days here and there, but like actually doing, like, being an integral part of one and wearing multiple hats as well. How are you, like, how is your head still attached to your body? This would be the main question.
I think that's a good idea to kind of come back to that, because, I've had, like, debriefs with Thea about the project overall for, like, different sections of it. But, yeah, like, I think the biggest takeaway is that, you know, you're talking about the planning and kind of the follow through. And I could sum it up in one word: chaos.
Yeah, ambitious was our word for West Flies the Raven, and I was like,
because like there was,
don't use that as like negative. Like, I took ambitious as like, yeah, but when was the last time you saw a short film that was, mm-hmm, ambitious? You know what I mean? And you with chaos, like, you know, if you know it's chaotic, then you know you can control it. Like when you don't know it's chaos, that's when you lost. As soon as you knew there was chaos, then you can begin to harness it.
Mm-hmm. And that's basically what it was, because like we were not planning to shoot it when we did.
Mm-hmm.
We were so not unprepared, but underprepared. Mm-hmm. Like we weren't as prepared as we wanted to be. And like there were definitely a lot of moments, like looking back, where, you know, oh, maybe we needed one or two more people to come up as crew to help us, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So, and yeah, it was chaos and it was chaotic and there was a lot of good stuff that came out of it. But the biggest thing for us was that, okay, we know that we can do it ourselves, but we also know in the future we don't have to. So when we get to the point where, because we're already kind of starting to plan up the next documentary.
Damn.
So we have a better sense of, okay, this is what worked, this is what didn't, this is what we need, this is what we don't need. And the best part of it is, for the most part,
bigger,
that's gonna better, be
and more badass. That's what we need, bro.
It's gonna be more centralized here in LA, so there won't be as much travel, because
that's good for you.
Definitely a huge.
It'll be easy. Yeah, that's to definitely find a crew huge thing, because well.
Like, yeah, and like. We went, you know, we were going to Boston. We were both expecting blizzard and snow and cold, because it was like February in Boston. And for the first like 4 or 5 days, it was clear skies and it was green. And so we were able to get a lot of good stuff.
Nice.
And then towards the tail end, it started to snow. And the thing is that Thea is physically allergic to the cold. So after a while, it starts to physically fuck with her.
Oh shit!
So having to have that in the back of our heads was a huge thing. So like, oh, we get to shoot this in LA. Thank fuck, because I have been to the East Coast twice with her to work on shoot stuff, having to deal with cold. And quite frankly, I am instituting a thing for myself. If I have to shoot in the East Coast, I am not shooting anything over there before March. Between the months of November and March, no go. Not happening. No. Fuck that. Been there. Done that. Not doing it again. If it is not integral to the goddamn story, I am not fucking going.
So you know how last week we needed to cut me off for the break? Let's go to the break, bro, so you can go.
Okay, yeah, let's go to the
break. When we come back, we're going to be talking about the writer's strike, and we're going to be talking about shorter episodes in seasons. Are they good? Are they bad? Find out when we come back.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
So I said to her, you know what I said to her? I said, I don't want to come on your tits. Oh, hey, Sebastian, how you doing?
You know what I thought you were going to do there? I thought you were going to do the Key and Peele thing. I was like, you know what I said? I said, bitch. Yeah. But you said bitch though. Yeah, I said.
Yeah. Ain't no thing.
Ain't no thing.
Speaking of Key and Peele, you know what I watched the other day when I was just in bed, I wasn't sleeping, I was like, may as well get on my phone and, like, you know, just, you know, watch some TikToks. I went onto YouTube. I watched the Bunny and Ducky Toy Story 4 trailer. Toy Story's my jam. To insanity.
To infinity and a blonde.
To indecency. And your mom.
Oh, they're casted so perfectly.
They were brilliant. And they were underutilized in the movie, though. Like, they had a whole trailer. The first trailer for the movie was these two motherfuckers doing, like, if you don't know, it's a parody of their door guy, like, racist ass Smelly Gibson's is my shit too. Liam Neeson's in Dark Man.
Two guys love Hollywood.
Liam Neeson's in Dark Man, though.
You know, so speaking of underutilized, there is a very, very dark period looming over Hollywood. In the form of a writer's strike.
Indeed, not the first one, and it definitely won't be the last one. But I have a friend on the inside who says this one is for sure happening. That, like, negotiations have been ongoing for a while, and just the people in charge of the Writers Guild America just aren't. They're just not getting it. They're just not getting the point. It's like, look, if we don't write, you can't film anything. And we motherfuckers are about to stop. And you know what people are writing right now? Next season's scripts of the TV shows currently going.
Yeah. And it's funny because, you know, we kind of alluded to talking about, you know, shorter TV seasons, you know, episode-wise for seasons.
Kind of goes hand in hand these two topics.
Oh, absolutely. Because, like, okay, so let's quick history lesson. The last time there was a writer's strike was in 2007, 2008. And that lasted for about 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
It lasted in 3 months, but it affected everything.
It affected,
in Hollywood.
So it affected Lost, House, Bones, all the CSIs.
Supernatural.
Really. Supernatural. To the point where, like, A season of House ended, and then because of the writer's strike, they had to, like, rush film for the new season, and, like, it restarted, like, the week after. And I was like, hang on, what? Like, what do you mean? Like, because we in the UK at that time, like, we were beholden to you guys. We usually got stuff, like, way back. But they had to, like, rush to give us stuff, because otherwise there would be nothing to see.
Yeah, and it's like, so looking back at a lot of the shows that were, because there was stuff that was affected that was already ongoing, so a lot of seasons that were already going at the time, you kind of mentioned a few of them already, were shortened. You know, these are shows that already had episodes in production, so, you know, you got to get those done. They just couldn't use any new scripts. And then there were some shows that were just straight up canceled during the fucking thing. I mean, a lot of them aren't anything that you would call
good,
great, or noteworthy.
Yeah, hit me with one. I want to see, like, give me a few. I want to see if I know any of them.
Okay. Cavemen.
Nuh-uh.
Girlfriends.
Nada.
The 4400.
I know that one. That's why that shit ended.
Yeah.
That had, like, that. I remember that being advertised over here for so long. Like, it used to advertise. It was like everything that came from America was usually shown on Sky. So Sky was like advertising the 4400. It's like, yo, after you finish Lost, make sure to stick around and watch the 4400. And it's out of nowhere. Like, it came and it left. And I had no idea why. And I was like, you know, like, I know when shit comes out, you stop seeing the trailers, but, like, I thought this shit was ongoing. You know, you still want to sort of get people to come and see, like, week after week, and then just boom, zilch. The 4400 was the zero. A little bit of a Math joke there for you. I'm losing it, man. I need to start drinking on these podcasts again. Otherwise, I'm going to come out with more shit like that. Water isn't doing it. Yes, that's cool. Like, I was literally about to, like, had you said the next one, and I didn't know it. I was like, it's time to move on. Like, you've been bamboozled.
No, but, like, you know, it's crazy. One of the things is that, like, the flip of that, where you have all these things getting canceled and a lot of scripted shows are being cut down and just tossed to the wayside. Hmm. You have what was essentially considered a boom period for unscripted TV.
Yes.
You didn't really necessarily need that stuff, you know, scripts for that stuff. Obviously, a lot of it is scripted, but you don't necessarily need it.
Yeah.
It's not as integral. So that was a big thing. But, you know, coming back to the strike that's coming up this year, I guess a lot of people don't know is why.
Okay.
It's happening. Yeah. So I don't know how familiar you are with it, or
it's possibly to do with a certain 5-letter word that, you know, everyone is looking to have more of. Money.
Yeah. Yep.
These motherfuckers are being told to write some of the biggest shows of all time. They make all this fucking money. What's one thing no writer really ever gets that every actor seems to get now is fucking royalties and residuals. Mm-hmm. Writers get paid a commission. They get paid a lump sum. If they do get paid like any form of residuals, it's because of like integral work. They're probably also a creator or a producer as well. But usually, you know, especially like we're being told at the end of TV shows that just James Gunn has written all these episodes of Peacemaker. Suck my donkey dick. There is a writer's room involved of uncredited little lemmings that are like, yo, it's about time we get some credit. And it's like, you know who led the way in sort of giving respect to the writer's room? Just a little show everyone hated called She-Hulk.
Yeah.
And I was one of the, that, like, when they did that, I was like, yo, that's sick. That Deadpool times 4 fourth wall break, like 14 walls, bro. Like, it was awesome. They did so well, but like, because, you know, at that point, you get paid a SAG actor's check.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, like, these uncredited writer's room need to start getting credited. Because these TV shows, these movies, that, like, you know, you've got more of a chance of a movie being written by, like, a couple of guys. Like, these TV shows, I don't know if anyone knows, but, like, there are buildings in LA, like, that literally have floors dedicated to the Sony writer's room, the Netflix writer's room, the Paramount writer's room. And they just, like, they just go from show after show, like, you know, they're being told to churn out, like, and if you look at, like, who's making movies and TV now, it's almost like, without realizing, we've regressed back to the studio system.
Yeah.
Where literally no one was, besides the big wigs and the big names, no one was getting paid. And that's literally what we're getting back to.
Yeah.
And, like, one thing we haven't talked about, which we are going to talk about in a couple of minutes, is the shorter episode per seasons. When you told me when the first writer's strike was, well, not the first, but like the main big one back in the mid-noughties, I think after that is when, like, it lost, went from 20 episodes to about 11, 13 episodes. The same thing happened to House. Breaking Bad came out, and that solidified, you know, we're doing 10 episodes per season. Like, these 23 episode per seasons, like, unless you were already established, like, they stopped coming out. Like, and is that part of the writer's strike? These, like, seasons with 10 episodes now?
So when they, you know, when that strike ended, everyone went back to work. And for most network shows, the traditional, you know, 22 episode, 23 episode season still stuck around for the most part.
Yeah.
Where it really changed was when House of Cards on Netflix dropped.
Ah, Netflix's first dark horse.
Because it showed that you could have a succinct, gripping television show without that many episodes, without the crazy episode order.
Mm.
And that's become the trend since.
Yeah.
You have TV shows with seasons that are like 10, 13 episodes, sometimes less.
Yeah.
Less episodes that are needed for a TV show, less chance for a writer to get paid. Less chance for writers to get put into the room because you don't need as many writers.
Yep.
And the thing is too, one of the things I was reading on like the bigger shows, like the bigger event shows, you know, Mandalorian, anything Marvel or Star Wars or anything like that,
mm-hmm.
you know, Game of Thrones, House of Dragon, that kind of stuff.
HBO shit.
These writers are contractually locked into these shows. So they're writing exclusively for these shows. Even if they're not explicitly writing for these episodes, once that's done, you're not allowed to go find another writing gig. You're freelance. You're not allowed to do that until the show is done or until they decide they no longer need you. And even then, you're not getting the residuals off what's, you know, like you tell, you're not an actor, you're not a face, you're the guy or girl or non-binary behind
you're the guy
computer
in the chair
typing a, you're the one the creating the world. You're the one creating the world, but because you're not the creator or because you're not the actors, you're not getting the recognition or the pay or any of that. And that's ultimately what this all boils down to. But there's also the threat and the worry about the rise of AI in production. If you go to AI and you're using that to write your scripts, what the fuck do you need a writer for?
Yeah, exactly. Like, even like there's a interview with Joe Russo even today, like, you know, it'll be the next big streaming thing is a streamer plus an AI, where it's like me plus Marilyn Monroe, you know, doing XYZ. I can guess what you're going to want that AI to create for you, and, you know, give it like an hour or two, and they'll generate it. Your face, her face, your voice, her voice. And it's scary. Like, AI is scary. So one thing I agree with Elon Musk about, until, like, I'd rather Bitcoin and cryptocurrency stays unregulated right now, because as soon as it is, like, that's it. That's the next form of, you know, that's the next form of currency. America's already heading in the direction of like paperless currency, because, you know, the dollar's about to fucking plummet into non-existent with the rise of Russia, China, Brazil, South Africa doing their thing. So, but what needs regulating is AI. Because a couple of years ago, me and my friend, we were actually in our local mall. Our local big shopping mall, Touchwood, and he at the time he was a banker, and this guy asked us, is like what do you do, and you know, I said I'm a writer, work for TV. They go back and like there was like a 0.1% chance of technology overtaking my job, but he was a banker, and there was like a 98% chance of his job getting taken, and he actually got like an interview, he was on TV and everything. And I was like, oh, mate, that's fucking cool, you're on TV. And I was like, that was less than 10 years ago. And now, banking is one of those things that, like, technology isn't even in the way of in some cases. America's only just, like, come into contactless. I was in America the other, like, a couple of weeks ago, and they were so excited. I was like, you can pay on contactless now. I was like, yeah. I know, you see this little symbol on my debit card? It's been there for about 6 years. Like, we've been here, bro. We've been here. We've been waiting for y'all. What the fuck? What the fuck? But now, I would say, you know, TV and film, writing, creating. Look at education. Education's fucked. The way AI can get in the way of certain education to the point where we've just allowed like laptops and iPads to be given to students. We need to take those away. We need to go back to paper. We need to go back to making sure these kids can write legibly, can write and form coherent sentences, can communicate coherent sentences outside of technology. That's what education needs to start doing itself for.
Yeah.
Rather than doing what education has been doing since, I think, our generation left education, which is how fast can I teach these kids? How fast can I get these motherfuckers out my fucking classroom so I can move on with whatever I want to do? That's why Finland teaching is regarded and at the same level as a lawyer or as a doctor. But like, you know, it's fucking Finland. No one gives a shit what Finland's doing. They've only just joined NATO. Like, all they have is education because it's so fucking cold. Like, you know, if other countries set themselves up like that, like right now, it's like, oh, if you teach, you know, you fail to do what you actually want to do. I was like, shut the fuck up. Like, anyone that has, like, ever said that, like, I've never wanted to slap someone so hard for saying something so stupid.
Mm-hmm.
But for us, the creatives, you're trusting technology to, like, bring in, like, emotion. The amount of stories we put in, like, from ourselves into our original writing. Like, every time you hear an interview, like, with someone about a movie or about a scene or about a particular moment in a series, and it's like, oh, yeah, you know, like actually happened to one of the producers, and, like, they pitched it to the writer, and then the writer sort of worked it into the series. And I was like, you can actually pick those moments out, because usually they are, like, the strongest moments. They are the most emotionally driven moments because they're grounded in some form of reality, which AI does not have.
You know, it's... Yeah. Yeah, and, like, you know, we're talking about, like, film writers as opposed to TV writers. One of the things that I was reading about that kind of stuck out to me was, like, the average pay for a film screenwriter was about the same as it was in 2018.
Mm.
So if you adjust for inflation, it's technically down 14%.
Jesus Christ.
And apparently there were a lot of writers who, like, they're paid less than 150 grand for a screenplay. They are then asked to do unpaid read writes.
Yeah.
For, like, more for their screenplays. And it's
some drafts, like, I'm doing second drafts of scripts, and the producer told, like, I asked the producer, I was like, oh, is there money here? It's like, oh no, we paid the first guy to do the draft, but, like, there's no more money. And I was like, you fucking what? And it's like, did this motherfucker fuck up a first draft so badly that you need a whole new writer?
You
like, what the hell? Like,
and you're not gonna pay the new writer?
Yeah.
And it's crazy because, like, apparently there are a lot of movies that come out on streaming, they end up getting paid as like movies of the week as opposed to a theatrical film.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, it doesn't have a theatrical release loophole, so I don't gotta pay you as much as if it was being released theatrically, which is bullshit. Jesus. Which is utter bullshit when you consider, especially,
unlooped.
No, and it's like it's absolute bullshit when you consider, especially post-pandemic world, not a lot of people were going to the movies. The movies that were coming out on these streaming services are the theatrical, you know, films that people were watching because they weren't fucking going anywhere.
Yeah,
they were at home. This is what they watched. So, you know, to pay the people who are writing these fucking things and telling them, oh, but technically it's not that. It's just a big fuck you to the person writing the movie.
Mm-hmm.
It is just a massive middle finger to them. And it's fucking ridiculous.
Writers are the first, are one of the first people to come in at ground level of a movie. Sort of, you know, sometimes you can stick around as, like, an on-set writer. That's pretty fucking rare. But, like, as soon as the movie's finished filming, like, you're gone. But it's, like, as someone who, like, writes movies and then they get given to directors and producers, it's like, as much as I love West Flies the Raven, I'm sort of sat here as the person who created it, the person who funded it, the person who came up with the idea, the person who like slaved over draft after draft after draft. It's like I have to sit there and be okay seeing people like I was barely tagged in shit, man. Like, and it's like it did, and but it, like it didn't hurt because like at the end of the day, the right people know my involvement. And it's like I can't, you know, I'm not about to sit here and like reply to everyone as like, yo, like where's my fucking tag? Like, you know, I was like in some cases on some of the stuff that was like put out today and over the last couple of days, I was tagged in about 40% of it. Even though like I follow all these people, like, you know, I see all their stories, I see everyone else's stories, and it's like at the end of the day, it's like as long as like my movie is in their mouth, that's the goal, and I'm happy with that. But like, because, you know, as a writer, what can you do to combat that besides learn to, you know, write something and then direct it? There's literally nothing else you can do. I'm happy people enjoyed the movie, and I'm happy that I'm continuing to work on the movie. You know, I made me and the boys, we made the right contacts to sort of, you know, get a feature on some wheels, and even get the short like out there in a global capacity. We've got some, you know, we met someone with a vast Instagram outreach, which is what we need. So, but like, that's because I created the story. I'm going to keep working on it. When you are a writer who's just hired to come on something, and then you don't have that, and then you see them, like, and then you see what you write, like what you've written, what you've written, like actually being produced, and then, like the writer's room doesn't even get a credit. It's written written by, like so and so, and like you're not even there. I was like, you know, that series wouldn't even have like as many scripts as it did without me and like the six other people that worked alongside me, that kind of thing. It's like writers are slapped across the face repeatedly. We need proper credits. We need proper pay. We need some form of residuals, and we need time off between seasons.
I think, you know, it's crazy because, like, you know, you think of how writers are portrayed or talked about, like, it shows about in anything regarding Hollywood, you know, an Entourage and, you know, fucking Californication, anything like that. Most writers are looked down on so hard.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
I guess I get, you know, the jokes, you know, for the most part, these aren't. Most, you know, most writers aren't, you know, the eye-catching type, quote-unquote. But, like, you know, these are the people who are giving you... They are literally creating the work for you.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have... You're a director without a script? What the fuck are you directing?
Yeah.
You're an actor without a script? What the fuck are you going to act?
Mm-hmm. What are you going to say?
You're just a... Exactly. You're just a douchebag with your dick in your hand.
They could be, I'm going to improv. Like, fuck off. No, you're not.
I'm going to improv. Fuck off, you're going to improv. Even the best improv, even shows that are primarily improv, have a script that has at least a somewhat coherent structure to what is going
to
happen.
To work on.
You don't have that if you don't have a writer.
Yeah.
Like you said, you know, unless you're writing and directing it yourself, which is what I do, which has been my goal, which will continue to be my goal. If I write something, I'm writing with the intention of directing. I don't ever plan on writing something and be like, you know what, you direct it. No. I will happily direct something for someone else, but no. That's, I wrote it. I'm directing it. Suck my dick.
Suck my dick. It's funny how we approach writing in a different way. Because I my anger issues got in the way of me directing. I knew I couldn't be on set as a director, especially after, like, certain events happened on some certain films, whereas, like, honestly, it sort of made me question being on set at all.
Yeah,
and it was funny. I'm gonna call this guy out. The Steadicam operator on West Flies the Raven. The last day, we didn't have Steadicam, but he, you know, he was there. He was like, he got breakfast because like he was allowed to be there. He looks at me and goes, "Hey, Adol, what are you doing? You're just sitting around today." And I was like, you know, I took it on the chin. I was like, oh, yeah, mate, yeah, 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 you know, yeah. I've got to read scripty for the guy that's forgot his fucking lines. And like that sort of sat with me, and I was like, how fucking dare you? You wouldn't even be here right now. You wouldn't, like, I know, yeah. They work, like, camera teams, they usually go from job to job to job. Yeah. Like, how fucking dare you? You wouldn't even have been on this ambitious of a shoot without me coming up with the idea. There, I said it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, no one else came up with this idea. I did.
Yep. And that's not ego. That's not ego. That is pure fact.
I allowed to take this, like, I took this script and I gave it to the right people to visualize it. I can't do what certain people who I've met can do. And that's what happened with Together Alone. That's what's happened with Westwise the Raven. I've met two people who who take my words and just know how to sort of give them life. I'm like, yo, if that continues to happen, then that's a match made in heaven. Mm-hmm. Like, to almost be looked down on like my own set that I funded, that I created. It's like, you know, it's one of those things, like, at the time, like, I should have stood up for myself. But then that's where, like that's where my point comes back to, like, and, you know, shit's happened on sets before where someone said something and I've popped off, like, and, like, sometimes I've been the director, sometimes I was just working as, like, I was the boom operator, man. And I was a mouthy gobshite. But, you know, this guy said that, and I was like, yeah, you know, I saw the banter in it. I saw the banter. I saw the joke. Because, honestly, I did look at myself at times on Westwise the Raven, and I'm like, bro, like, yeah, it's almost dinner time. Can you guys seem to have this. I can go, right? Like, but it's like, you know, I like being there. I like, you know, like, the director who I write for, like, he even come, like, before we shoot, he's like, no, I need you there. Because sometimes when shit changes, like, on the day, we need, like, me and, like, I'm directing, Ben's producing, you know, we need you as the world builder to sort of come up with something on the spot. And it was almost every day.
Yeah.
I needed to do something. I needed to rewrite, like, two lines, or I needed to inception and craft a couple of lines, or, like, a line needed changing or some shit. And, like, you know, if I take too long on that, then the whole day slows down and we lose time. I'm the only one there who can, like, pick up an iPad and go, wash, 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 wash. Like, on Together Alone, the day before we shot a certain scene, I woke up that morning with the co-writer, and we had to craft a whole new scene because the weather changed and we couldn't go outside and play football. And even then, we were on a cliff and we had to film with a kid. You know that kid is going to hurl that ball into non-existence and it's going to roll down the hill right into fucking Bath Town Centre and hit some old lady in the face, and then that's a lawsuit.
My dentures. I've been knocked off my balance. My cup of Earl Grey tea. No.
Like, you could just see that happening. Like, in between us with the frisbee, just hitting that retarded kid in the face. So it was like, we had to come inside, and I was like, yo, production design, we need presents. So, like, we got, like, camera, like, we got the camera boxes, we got the boxes that, like, certain stuff came in. I was like, runner, go down, go to Bath, get wrapping paper, get balloons, get, like, 10th birthday party, big balloon shit. And we, by the time the actors were ready to shoot, we had everything ready for a birthday scene. And that's because me and the co-writer were, like, we knew the characters inside and out. We knew the story inside and out. And we knew, like, right, if they're not playing football, what can they do indoors that is visually exciting and emotional enough that someone would inception the memory for a VR experience? And honestly, it made more sense to be a 10th birthday party than just kids playing football. Like, than his wife and his kid playing football. Because, mm-hmm. like, that ended up being a pivotal thing, because, like, he opens up this box of memories, and it's, like, first birthday, fifth birthday, 10th birthday, 16th, like, you know, a possible wedding, holidays. And I was like, yo, like, this, it worked out for the better. So, but, like, you know, that's, you know, I'm learning. You know, I've learned to take stuff on the chin. Like, I've, you know, banter is... there's a thin line between, yep. like, abuse and funny, and like the word is banter. And like before, I took it very harshly. Like you've been with me on set, whereas like, do I need to be the one to tell Ed to stop? Like. Because if no one does, there's times where I'll just put myself into a really dark place, and I won't talk to anyone, like any little thing that goes wrong, like will snap me off. Like at the end of one set, I was wrangling wires, and like it kept going wrong, and when it got wrong the third time, I was like, fuck, like everyone was there, everyone heard it. But no one came over, because they knew if they did, I would just see red. And that's why, you know, I like to sit at a desk and focus on writing.
Yeah, and like, you know, bringing it back to the strike, you know, the way you're talking about how, you know, you're the go-to to make changes on the day.
Yeah.
You're the go-to to having to completely rethink a scene that isn't going to work for XYZ reasons. And you know, in both scenarios, you know, obviously you're the one funding it, so it's not as big a financial burden to you. Mm-mm. But putting yourself in the situation of, you know, this is my job and I'm not getting paid, despite the fact that I am literally saving a production from XYZ, you know, the weather, the fucking, this cast member six, we can't be on this day, and this and that. And so, you know, it comes back to what I think ultimately what it comes to is respect, and how it is still so possible that in an industry built on words that are written by someone on pieces of paper, that the writers of those words are still so disrespected. Like, this isn't a young industry. This industry has been around for over 100 years.
Yeah.
If that.
No, about 100 years.
And it's looking at the people who are probably the most, if not, yeah, no, the most important part of that, of any story told, and to still look down on them and not give them their due is fucking mind-blowing. Like, how, like, you know, you put yourself on this pedestal, like, oh, you know, these movies are making billions of dollars and this and that. Yeah, but you wouldn't have those billions. You wouldn't have the studio system. Streaming wouldn't be what it is if people weren't doing what you and I do. We sit at a desk, pull out a laptop, and start typing, because we have something in our head and we need to get it the fuck out. And so, you know, coming back, you know, the strike, so they don't come to a deal. I think it's by May 1st at 11:59 p.m. May 2nd, they go on strike. Hollywood effectively shuts down.
Yeah, it was meant to like be. It was meant to be just, June, but like, I've been told by sources that it got moved to May because of how bad negotiations were going.
And like, it was a unanimous. Every member of the Writers Guild was like, yup, let's fucking go.
Yeah.
Because like because you can't, especially with streaming and, you know, with everything going on, you can't keep treating writers like that. With everything that's potentially coming, you can't keep treating writers this way. You don't have writers, you don't have shit.
You know what?
Doesn't matter how good the director is.
You know what me and my mentor are going to do during the writer's strike? Reach out to executive producers looking for content and be like, hey,
you know what's,
we've got something prepared.
Dude, you know what's fucking, you know what, it's so fun. You know, we're talking about this. The flip dark side of it. for people who aren't members of the WGA, you, like you,
it's Christmas.
And like me, it's opportunity.
Yep. Yep.
And it sucks, you know. It's like, guys, strike, fight for your due. But also, you're out of the way. I can finally get my foot in the fucking door.
You're standing there like that guy from The Wedding Singers. Like, he's losing his mind. And I'm reaping all the benefits.
That is, sums that up so perfectly. Fuck.
You know how I know that? I watched it over the weekend.
That movie, oh, John Lovitz.
IMDb'd this movie. It has like a low IMDb score and has a low Metacritic score on IMDb, and I'm like, some movies that have been like that have negative IMDb numbers, like there needs to be like an overhaul re-review, because The Wedding Singer is awesome, bro. Like, that is one of Adam Sandler's better movies.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the whole moment where it's like, okay, cool, that, you know, that would have been good if you'd brought that to my attention yesterday. The girl keeps talking again. Would have been better if you brought that to me yesterday. You can't not sit there and start creasing, bro.
Yep.
Fucking Billy Idol with the cameo. Come on, man.
Oh. It's definitely going to be an interesting time in Hollywood, because like there was the Ayatollah strike that was.
It's going to be like a barren, featureless desert on some sets in some studios.
But it's one of those things where like you're trying to look at it from both lenses. On one hand, obviously it is scary because, you know, these people are fighting for what they feel like they are owed, and rightfully so. So, you know, they are literally deciding to not work until that happens. On the other hand,
hello there.
There's opportunity,
General. And this, Kenobi. You know,
so you know, there's an opportunity for new voices to kind of slither in.
Hello, and Hermione. Mind if I sliver in?
So, you know, you hope that, at least for me, I hope that there is an opportunity to take advantage.
That are searching for, like, the respect they deserve, the money they deserve, I hope they fucking get it. But I hope those, like me and you, that have been struggling for the past few years not even get our foot in the door, which is a phrase that like not even people in the film industry seem to know now. Not even get to the door to wade through that fog of war to find where even the objective for the building is.
Yeah.
And even in there, like, how do I get past the lobby? What floor? What elevator? And then when I'm on the right floor, what number door? Like, and then how do I make sure the right person is in there at the right time, that kind of shit.
Yeah, because there was definitely, because, you know, like looking back at, you know, the strike from 07, like there was a rise in unscripted, but there was also people who weren't members of the WGA being, you know, discovered and being able to pitch their stuff and hopefully selling. So, like, you know, it's good and bad, but, you know, it's what this industry is, man. Not everyone.
You take the good, you take the going, bad, and what do you have? The facts of life. The facts of life? The facts of life.
There you go. And the fact of life is, if there is an opportunity, we'd be stupid not to try and take advantage of it.
Opportunity makes the thief.
There you go.
I think we've run out of time to talk about shorter episode seasons. You know what? I like
it. We kind of talked about it. No, just real quick, because like one of the things that I feel like, because I think it's a good comparison, because like a lot of English shows that I have watched that were out there, you know, for and your part of the world for a while, Mm-hmm. We're already pretty, you know, they had seasons with relatively short episodes. Like, I feel like that's a little more commonplace for you as opposed to me.
Yeah, 100%. So, like, there's a lot less of a focus on reality TV. We definitely don't have, like, the whole, what was the big one on Netflix? Love is Blind, which is, like, one of the big ones. And then you've got, like, The Bachelorette. We've only just started our own, like, Mass Singer kind of interpretation. So we don't really, like, there's some, like, cable TV, like, I would call it, to sort of, so people can understand, we have broadcast television. Like, there's still, like, you know, there's some reality TV there. Like, we definitely have, like, we've got channels focused in narrative, kind of, that narrative focus, like, you know, there's a whole section of, like, ITV that's dedicated to narrative. Sky is dedicated to narrative. BBC sort of went, like, when you watch the year end of the fireworks, they have, like, this big trailer of, like, sort of what to expect throughout the year. And there's, you know, the focus is on what their narrative is. And, like, they, like Apple TV, they nitpick, like, what they make. Mm-hmm. And I think for shorter episode like numbers, so like for those of you that like don't understand what we're talking about there, it's like you've noticed like your favorite TV shows right now, like sometimes when you binge them in like one day, Cobra Kai comes out day one, the whole season, and I'm one of those little gremlins that will sit in my room and be like, next episode, because I don't want them fucking spoilers.
Mm-hmm.
If for me, it's like gaming now. It's all like and they're both forms of entertainment. I don't have the time for time sinks. And the same is for TV. If I don't have the time to time sink into an RPG anymore, I don't have the time to stick with a series for 24 weeks of my life. Shit changes fast. My focus on watching stuff now is on streaming at my own time, at my own pace, knowing that, you know, it's actually not that many episodes. And even then, when Amazon still is trying to sort of revive the whole event-based week-by-week series, like, they, like, because they were disappointed with, like, you can't be disappointed with, like, how well The Boys season one was received, but, like, they saw a drop-off. Like, after two weeks, no one was watching The Boys. So they were like, shit. People loved it, but it was too, you know, we blew our load too quickly, man. Like, they wiped the jizz off and went to the next thing. And so, you know, that's when they started focusing, like, okay, cool. And people were complaining. It's like, yo, like, I want to watch The Boys, like, all the way through. But what's happened since? The longevity of The Boys in people's mouths now, to the point where it was voted the best comic book adaptation series movie of last year. Because it didn't come, like, you know, they didn't come too soon. They did the episode by episode. They had, like, they even treated one episode as, like, their, you know, their, like, sort of the orgy episode. They were like, you know, make sure not to spoil it online for those that can't see it straight away, all that kind of thing. It's the Disney Plus ones that are starting to piss me off, man. And Succession as well. I won't say the Succession one, because people are still watching that, and that's huge. That's like that. There hasn't been a water cooler TV show since Lost, I would say, and Succession is trying to do that as it's ending. Yeah. But like Mando, Obi-Wan, and Andor, I couldn't be on Twitter, bro. Disney Plus and the, like, Star Wars fans love to run their fucking mouths, man. Oh, did you see what happened in the last episode of Mando? And like, I was off Twitter. Like, it came out last week, last Wednesday, and like I was off Twitter until, I think it was last Saturday. Was when I got the chance to watch it.
I've straight up deactivated Twitter, dude.
Yeah,
I don't see the point of it anymore.
Cesspool of assholes. mostly yep. Star Trek assholes.
I just didn't want to be a part of it anymore. I barely used it. It was just kind of there. So I was just, fuck it. I'm done with it.
Yeah. No one does the spoiler alert anymore.
No. No one give a fuck.
And we don't, like, don't one care. Thing. We, the one thing we can talk about was the photo of Kylo Ren killing Han Solo that was released online 3 days after The Force Awakens came out. For me, that was ruined on Twitch. I was watching. I can't remember who I was watching, but like I was in the chat for whatever reason. Like I just loaded in, so I hadn't had time to sort of full screen and get rid of the chat box. And like the guy was like, "Oh, has anyone seen The Force Awakens yet?" First response was Han Solo dies, and I was like, "Oh, you're trolling." And then I saw the movie, and I was like, "Yo, that fucking cunt! I hope you get hit by a car." And I hope the driver's like, wait, is he dead? Let me reverse. Let me make sure.
Let me double check.
Yeah, let me double check. Dunk, 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 dunk. And I hope like the ambulance comes in and be like,
"What was that?
Oh shit! Crap! He shifted. Like, you know, we could put him back in the ambulance and take him back to the hospital and wait 12 hours for him to be seen, only not to be saved. Or we could just put him in that lake over there and just forget about him." Like, I hope that's what happened to that guy.
I love that your ambulance drivers turned into quick mob hitmen.
Oh, of course, yeah, absolutely.
And you just make them, you know, just make them sleep with the fishes. You know, we can make it do fishes, that. There's no paperwork or anything.
We got some ammonia nitrate in the back, like ipso facto.
Yeah. Hey, Tony, give me the bottle. Give me the bottle of the stuff right there. Just bring it out over here.
Give me the stuff. Not the salsa, you stupid grunt.
Fuck, man.
But yeah.
It's definitely going to be an interesting time going forward, especially after the strike, because it's going to change.
We'll have to do a strike update episode.
Oh, yeah. For sure.
Yeah. Come to us for all your
rights. But until then.
You free those balls.
We hate to love you and leave you. Free those balls.
Free those balls.
So remember to like, share, comment, subscribe. And we'll see you next time.
Bye.
Come join us on this trip. Now we're like to the throwing out the scripts.
Come on, man. Come join us on the trip. I'm sorry. Now we're throwing out the scripts. I hope we don't charge a penny. I hear the weekend's calling. Now it's time to start. Free ball.